Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Legalizing cocktails to go was a key consumer legacy of the pandemic. This year, New York State lawmakers could allow for wine sales in grocery stores, and diners could soon be able to leave New York restaurants with a bottle of their favorite craft liquor. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons reports.
We'll toast to that.
We'll crack open a bottle.
State Senator Pat Fahey, a champion of several alcohol sale-related bills, says new legislation would allow the sale of sealed private label liquors at restaurants and bars. The liquor would have to be distilled in and made with New York-grown ingredients. The bill applies only to bottles. Promoting the bill at the Tipsy Moose in Albany, the Democrat says the state's craft beverage industry is second in the nation with an annual impact of $5.4 billion.
It's more important now than ever that we help our restaurants, our distilleries, which again help our farms. And it's a win-win-win, but we need that flexibility on what our antiquated laws.
Current law prohibits restaurants and bars from selling sealed bottles. Fahey says between 2020 and 2021, the number of craft beverage producers nearly doubled in the capital region alone. Fahey also sponsored legislation allowing for the purchase of one to-go drink per meal in 2022 if the beverage is sold in a secure sealed container. Under the new proposal, participating restaurants would be required to report annual total sales volume to the state liquor authority, capping sales at 75,000 gallons per year per license holder. During the pandemic, Tipsy Moose, which has three locations, began selling bottles but was slapped on the wrist by the state liquor authority. Owner Rob Terrio says liquor laws are complicated.
I made a mistake. I definitely misinterpreted the ABC laws. It was a bit complex for me. So that being said, I came to her with hopes to change the law and improve this situation so that we'd be able to have our brand go to somebody's house, be able to market better, be able to, you know, revenue for the restaurants and partner up with a local distillery.
Not everybody is ready to pop the cork. The New York State Liquor Store Association's president says the bill would hurt liquor stores. Michael Carrera, executive director of the Metropolitan Package Store Association and a Brooklyn liquor store owner, says a change in the law could put many small businesses out of business.
If you buy a bottle of Tito's a week and you get an opportunity to buy one at a liquor store or you get to buy it at a restaurant, the chances are you're not going to buy two bottles. You're only buying that one bottle, just buying it someplace else. So consumption is not going to increase. It's just going to put a financial hurt on independent liquor retailers.
Carrera says he doesn't see a compromise that would keep liquor stores whole.
We only sell two things in a liquor store by law, wine and liquor. So if you're giving somebody else the opportunity to sell that product, obviously that's going to dilute the need for me, my business.
The legislative session runs through mid-June. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
The head of New York's public university system makes more than $1 million a year. That figure has lawmakers in Albany pushing for more pay regulations. The New York Public News Network's Jung-Yoon Han reports.
To put this into perspective, the governor makes $250,000. John King, SUNY's chancellor, receives nearly four times that amount, plus a monthly housing allowance of $15,000. Capital Region Republican Jake Ashby says that's frustrating for his constituents.
They look at that and they're kind of scratching their head, thinking, is this a joke?
Ashby is introducing a bill that would require the Senate to sign off on any salaries for heads of state agencies or commissions if they're higher than the governor's salary. Ashby is also introducing another law that would require SUNY chancellors to live in the state, which he says would make a housing allowance unnecessary.
What we're looking at in terms of these bills is just more oversight in general.
Hudson Valley Democrat James Skoufis wants to take things a step further. The senator says the chancellor's salary should not be more than the governor's.
This is just patently elitist. It is out of touch. And it's incumbent upon the legislature to now do something about it.
Skoufis is proposing a pay cut for King in the state budget and is reintroducing a bill he wrote in 2023. If it passes, salaries for top leaders in the SUNY and CUNY systems would have to get the green light from both legislative chambers and the Division of Budget. Representatives from SUNY have defended the pay raise in the past. They say the chancellor's salary is similar to that for other leaders at other public university systems across the country. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. We spoke about a new report from the Comptroller's office, which finds the state is vulnerable to cuts from Washington and affordability spending plans in the governor's budget proposal.
Yeah, it's Medicaid and school aid are always the two biggest portions. And so you're really talking about the potential for billions of dollars less. And that's really going to be a challenge because already those costs have been going up. Those two areas are the big cost drivers. So I'm very concerned about where this is all headed. And, you know, what we said in our budget report is that there's no contingency in this budget plan the governor put forward to deal with any of this. And I know one of the challenges is the obvious one. We don't know what the cost impact will be. Right. So it is hard in that sense to come up with a contingency since you don't know what the cuts may be. But we mean the controls office. We've given credit to the governor and the legislature in recent years for building up our reserve funds, which has been very, very good, over $21 billion now. But those reserve funds should really be there for a real financial or fiscal emergency, like the close down that happened when COVID hit, like when the financial markets, you know, tanked and we had the Great Recession, was it 12, 13 years ago, whatever, to deal with the restructuring of the state-federal relationship. That should not be what those reserve funds are going to be used for. So I'm a little concerned that, you know, already we see in this budget proposal, the out-year budget gaps now talking about growing to $27 billion, you know, over 3 years. So this budget, while it's very generous in the short run, already we have problems in aligning our spending and our revenue. Add on top of that possible federal cutbacks, we really could be in a very, very tight squeeze in the near future. So I'm certainly very concerned about that.
Yeah, and all of this spending from the governor and her budget proposal is to attempt to deal with affordability, which we're quickly seeing is potentially damaging in and of itself if you spend too much, with the potential for this other money to be pulled away. And on top of all that, you have the congestion pricing plan, which they're worried about, right? So if somehow they reached in and stopped that, then you've got the MTA budget, which is already struggling to fill a hole.
Yeah. Look, I don't think anybody would disagree. The governor is absolutely on point with what New Yorkers are concerned about in terms of affordability. And you look at many of the specific proposals. I mean, look, more money for schools, more money for child care, you know, which is another big issue. We did a report on that recently to show many parts of our state are what we call child care deserts, more money for housing. I mean, you go down the list, mental health programs. It's hard to argue with some of those policy priorities, but, you know, the challenge is, yes, we have the money now. As we've talked about on your show many times in recent months, our tax revenue continues to come in higher than projected. That's still the case. So, you know, I'm confident we have the money today to pay for the kind of programs that have been outlined by the governor in her proposal. The concern I have is a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. The worst thing, David, would be to make commitments for programs, especially new funding options, and not have the money there to back it up. And then you run into the situation where you then have to pull back on some of those commitments in the not too distant future. So I do hope, understanding that the affordability question is a serious one, the governor's proposing a tax cut for middle-class families that most New Yorkers would benefit from. Again, hard to argue with the merit of that, but I do hope the legislature and the governor, as they hammer this out for the final budget, hopefully by April 1st, they make some choices as far as spending that will have not just implications of adding money over the next, you know, 2-3 years, but I would hope there'd be a more thoughtful examination of our audits, what we've recommended, you know, the tendency.
Because it's easier
is just to add money to programs and not really talk about how to make them sustainable on the long term.
No wonder, Tom. No wonder people get so cynical. Here you have, and you've told this many times, you have gone in, researched where they can find money, where there are problems they can fix. And now if we look at Musk and Doge, here they come in, everyone's yelling, you didn't wait, you didn't look, you didn't see what we need to cut. Well, even when you do that, Tom, the lawmakers don't respond to your recommendations.
Yeah.
Isn't this just one more sign of
when we do things wrong, when we don't take advantage of improving government
by your suggestions, you get a lot of cynical people out there, and maybe some of them are saying, good, go ahead, cut. We can't rely on the lawmakers to listen to the recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of our frustrations. You know, people often say, well, you make all these recommendations. How come nothing happens? Well, we don't have an enforcement authority. And I'm not saying necessarily that we should, but we always hope that what we put out, well, we at least would hope there'd be more conversation about what we propose. And I think as people have gotten frustrated, and it's fair to say that frustration contributed to, you know, the result of the national elections last year, then you get this group that comes in, you know, and maybe it sounds good in terms of what, you know, government efficiency, but if it's based on a total disregard, you know, for government and a real effort not to be more efficient, but in fact to just destroy, at some point people are going to wake up and realize maybe that's not quite what they had in mind. But
yeah, because among all those people in those agencies of government that you're firing and letting go, many of those will end up being people who would vote for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're in a very complex time right now, and that's all the more reason why at the state level, I'd like to think that we could be smarter and really demonstrate to New Yorkers that we are capable of managing our finances responsibly, providing quality services, especially for people in need, but doing it in a way that's efficient and sustainable on the long term. You just can't continue to, you know, raise spending on every single program and raise taxes as a way to deal with these issues. We have to be a bit more thoughtful.
We're speaking with the very thoughtful Tom DiNapoli, the State Comptroller of New York. I'm David Giustina, and you're listening to The Capital Connection. Well, I saw something move in the news fairly recently, Tom, and I immediately went, I got to ask Tom about this. It scared the zippers off me. Now, that is that I read, now you have to correct me and correct all the listeners now who I'm sure have been thinking about this, that hedge funders were betting that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, was going to crash the stock market at some point. You know, those of us that have 401ks or 403bs, we're told keep that money in the stock market for the long term. But with all the chaos in the first days and, you know, the markets being based a lot on anxiety, with a statement like that, it can create just that kind of anxiety.
You know, I would say this. I don't think any president, including this one, wants to crash the markets. But the volatility has been there. In fact, David, you may have seen we put out our pension fund results for the third quarter, you know, because we're on the state fiscal year, so we still have till March 31st. Basically, we were flat, and we had like a tiny, tiny dip because the markets were very up and down. So I think the markets are still trying to figure out where this is all headed. From my perspective, you know, as trustee for the pension fund, you know, $270 billion, give or take, what's important to me is that March 31st valuation date, because that's when we value the fund, and that's the number that goes into our calculation for how much we're going to charge our government employers, right? So the state government, all the local governments across New York State and school districts, that has an impact on taxpayers, on local budgets. So, you know, we had last year at the end of the fiscal year an 11.5% return, which was really good when you consider our long-term goal is a 5.9% return. So I'm hoping we have a good quarter this go around because I want to beat that 5.9% number. But all of this depends, though, on the market staying strong. And I don't give investment advice, even though I'm, you know, I'm the trustee for the pension fund. But, you know, what I always say to folks in terms of how we even operate, usually the best advice is just stay the course.
That's New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Former New York State Senator Michael Martucci has been tapped as Region 2 Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Region 2 covers New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. Martucci, a Republican, comes in at a time when President Trump has promised cutbacks across federal agencies and laid out specific goals for the EPA, including promoting the economy and energy production. He'll answer to former Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin, who's now running the agency. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King spoke with Martucci about his objectives as administrator after his first 2 weeks on the job.
I came here and have been blessed with some of the most intelligent and dedicated career staff. I'm talking about scientists, engineers, lawyers, folks who do community engagement work on the ground in our communities. And these are people who have been working on some of the biggest environmental issues the region faces for decades. My first piece really has been coming up to speed on a lot of those issues and what they are. But I would tell you that my primary focus, which is a focus that has been laid out by our agency's administrator, also a fellow New Yorker, Lee Zeldin, are focused around the core of our mission, which is ensuring that every American has access to clean air, clean water, and clean land.
What would you say is your position on climate change and humanity's role in it?
Well, so I'll point to two things. I just mentioned about Administrator Zeldin, and I don't know if you had the opportunity to check out his congressional hearing, but our administrator spoke to this very issue in his hearing, and the effects that human behavior has had on climate and our planet. And I would tell you that I approach that much in the same fashion. There's no doubt that there are issues that we're dealing with here in our region that are connected to climate change and the effects of climate change. So, as I begin to dig a bit deeper with our team here, our career team, again, the folks I was talking about, our scientists and our engineers, I'm really interested in their plans and ideas that they have, actionable steps that we can take to make this planet a healthier place for all of us.
Well, I'd like to chat a little bit about some specific issues in New York. Something that I've been doing a lot of reporting on is PCB contamination in the Hudson River. The EPA recently released its third five-year review of a GE dredging project in the Upper Hudson, and it led to a lot of frustration from environmental advocates here because they want the EPA to declare the dredging not protective of the environment. They say data shows that it's not working, but the latest five-year review of the EPA said it doesn't have enough data. So I guess I'm just wondering, I want to get your thoughts on the situation. Like, what do you view as the disconnect here?
Yeah, so Jesse, as I said, I've really been coming up to speed on a lot of the key issues around the region with the staff, the career staff that are here. And, while I have not had the opportunity to dig deep into this, and I expect to be digging very deep into this issue in the coming weeks, what I do know right now is that EPA at our regional level here is declining a final determination until more review is conducted. I think that perhaps you and I could circle back on this in just a few weeks once I really have an opportunity to understand in greater depth exactly the work that's been done there, the work that potentially is planned there. But right now, what I do know about this is that more data is needed in order for the agency to make a final determination.
New York has moved to eliminate gas stoves and heating in new construction. Do you think this is a good idea?
From my perspective here, and, things that you've been seeing our administrator talk a little bit about, I'll say overall is that, one of the things that we're focused on doing here is being protective of the environment and at the same time acknowledging some economic pain that people are feeling right now. While you can talk about specific state mandates and what those mandates mean, from our perspective, protecting our environment and making life easier and more affordable for people that live in the region are not mutually exclusive. And I think that the approach that I'm looking to take is to be informed on the science and at the same time pay attention to the economics of things that are happening right now and acknowledge that every single person driving an electric car is just economically infeasible. Folks can't afford that, right? That's not something that's affordable right now for the average everyday New Yorker or person who lives in New Jersey or any part of this region for that matter. So really what it comes down to is balance. And I think that in the coming weeks, as our administrator really becomes seated in the agency, you're going to see some more priorities come down as it relates to this balance. And those are things that I'm looking to employ here in the region. But what I do want to say, while balance is important, the mission of the EPA, of this agency, remains unchanged. And that is to protect the environment and protect human health. And I'm looking forward to doing my part to make sure that that mission is fulfilled, again, in a way that just simply doesn't bankrupt people.
Well, on that note about balance, you know, the president has said he wants to promote energy production, including fracking across the U.S. You know, how do you reconcile that with laws in New York where fracking is banned?
Well, so, I mean, yeah, you speak about New York and, you know, the state has its fracking ban, which is currently the law in New York. Jesse, I don't know. I can't sort of speak to how a changes in federal policy, whatever they will be, will impact individual states. And I don't want to speculate on that either. You know, but what I will say is that the president has been very clear about the fact that energy production and domestic energy production is important, right? So I know that will be a focus of this administration and this agency. You know, another priority that's been spelled out very clearly by our administrator is his emphasis on cooperative federalism, right? And ensuring that states have, you know, their role, and we work cooperatively with states. So I think that in places like New York and New Jersey, there will be times when the federal administration's priorities conflict with state priorities. I don't know exactly how that spells out right now. But what I will also say is that, you know, from an agency perspective and from my perspective in relation to state partners, even when we have disagreements on policy, the things I have done in the first couple of weeks that I've been here is connected with the state DEC commissioners in both of the states, well, DEC in New York and DEP in New Jersey. And have connected with those commissioners and expressed that we want to work alongside of them and with them cooperatively throughout this administration, because the challenges that we face in terms of protecting human health and the environment can't just be done by the staff here in Region 2. We need our state partners and our local partners. So, you know, I think that that has also been one of the priorities that I've laid out in the first 2 weeks, is be clear that while there might be policy differences in the future, what that doesn't mean is that we're not going to work cooperatively when it comes to our core mission.
I know you're just in your first weeks on the job here, but, you know, in these first 2 weeks, what are some specific locations maybe with air and water pollution that have caught your eye that you want to hone in on?
Well, I think that, you know, from the two highest levels, you know, I've been briefed by our air division. And as you probably are aware, you know, one of our big focuses are areas, what we call areas of non-attainment, you know, areas that don't meet air quality standards. You know, I want to see a region where every single person in this region is breathing air that meets our air quality standards. So my laser focus is going to be in places right now that we're not reaching attainment, right? Those are going to be our priority areas that we focus on. And we've got some of them here, not only sort of in the northern part of the region. When I say that, what I mean is in New York and New Jersey, but also in places like Puerto Rico, where we have non-attainment areas. So that would be, I guess, my, you know, succinctly on the air front, we're going to look at those non-attainment areas. Certainly on the waterfront, as you speak about those, it tees right into some of the Superfund sites that you talked about, right? So we have several large Superfund sites in the region that are directly connected to water quality. And lastly and finally, on the clean land front, we have a team here in a division that's focusing, again, this sort of falls under Superfund, but also under a very important program, which is a brownfields program that is centered in economic development. You know, you call a place like Newburgh home, you know that even, you know, communities like yours have brownfield sites. And I look forward to prioritizing those sites. A lot of these are former industrial sites that, you know, can be repurposed and reused in a good economic way. We're fixing community blights and we're creating opportunities in places that I think will benefit from them in a tremendous way. You know, the other piece, Jesse, again, is like, I've been here 2.5 weeks. But what I'm super excited to do is get out on the road and spend some time in these communities, connecting on the ground and finding these opportunities in connection with our local partners. And I'm talking about going out and meeting small city mayors. I'm talking about going out and meeting with county and local representatives, some of my former colleagues in the state legislature in New York, and new folks who I'll meet in New Jersey, to try to identify these places and communities, because that's the kind of work that I'm most interested in doing.
Lastly, the president has said that he wants to cut spending at the EPA and most federal agencies, really. How do you see that impacting your staff and your role as Region 2 administrator?
Well, look, so there's two pieces to this, right? So as you know, the administration has undertaken a deep dive and deep review of many of the contracts and grants that are currently held by the agency. Certainly that is something that's been a priority in terms of the new administration wrapping its hands around spending and making sure that every single tax dollar that's a hard-earned tax dollar by an American that's provided to this agency is used in a responsible way. So there's that undertaking that's taking place right now. The other piece, which I'm sure that you are well aware of because it's widely reported in the news, is that the president has issued a number of directives concerning the federal workforce. Among them are things like returning to the office policies for federal workers, restoring accountability for employees who have decision-making authority, and also potential proposed cuts. Now, at my level, I don't know exactly what that means, but what I would say is, my focus is going to be to ensure that we stay completely focused to and committed to our core mission and those founding, the statutory requirements of this agency and sort of, the founding principles here, which again, is making sure that every American has clean air, clean land, and clean water. And I look forward to doing that. I'm excited to be part of a team that gets to do that.
That's EPA Region 2 Administrator Michael Martucci speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2508. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.